Welcome back, everybody. We have the opportunity of learning. This is a section in Tanakh which is about David's children. So we're now focusing more and less on David himself, more on his children. And we're in the middle of Shmuel Beis Perek Yud Gimel. We're actually in the middle of a very unfortunate episode. So we're in the middle of the Perek, but just a little bit of background as to what happened last time is that David Melech has a firstborn son whose name is Amnon. He has a number of children from different wives. And the child that he has, Amnon has a stepsister whose name is Tamar, whose blood brother is Avshalom. And what we learned last time is that Amnon has this incredible desire for Tamar, and he tricks her into coming, and against her will, he rapes her. And that was where we stopped, and it was a terrible, terrible episode. But unfortunately, what we're going to do now is today we're picking up the pieces. So this is where things get, unfortunately, a little more serious. So what we're going to do is the following. Let's take a look at the attempt for today is to finish Perek Yud Gimel. It's a longer Perek, but to get a little bit of perspective as to what's really going on here in each person's mind as this happens, as this unfolds. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to follow Tamar's reaction. Okay, so Tamar is now coming out of this. What does she do? How does she relate to this? So what we're going to do is the following: we're starting in the psukim. If you have the psukim itself, we're just going to look through one chunk, which is from pasuk tesvav to pasuk chaf beis, and this is her response, and this is how it sort of closes off the story. So what happens is that after he abuses her, we have the following really terrible, terrible response, which is vayisna eha Amnon pasuk tesvav. And very strange words. He now hates her more than he loved her, right? So meaning to say, after he's abused her, the degree of the pain is more than the amount of the love and experience for her beforehand. And he says, leave. Now, I want to actually apologize. I didn't mention this beforehand, but this shir and the next two shirim are being sponsored by Autumn, and that is Le'ili Nishmas, her father, Zev ben Moshe, Mr. Walter Lido, who's Shloshim we are in currently, and it should be a tremendous aliyah for his neshama that our learning, our discussion, and our continued discussion should be. We welcome you back to the shir this week. At the same time, I also want to wish a special mazel tov to Shelley on a very special engagement. And Mitzvah Shem, there should be continued, everlasting smachos in the mishpacha always. So it's wonderful how we come together on the lows but and the highs together. So just a distraction from the psukim themselves, but this is why we're here. So what's very, very curious? This whole pasuk is one very curious pasuk. And that is why is it? Meaning, like, if he really loved her, he really loved her. But then why does he hate her? How volatile is he? Such a strange reaction. Before we get to analyzing it,
she says, please don't do this. Don't send me out.
And he won't listen to her. So at the beginning, she's begging him to leave her alone. Now he's throwing her out and she's begging him, you know, keep me here, and he doesn't listen in any case. Like he is so oppositional to anything she has to say.
Throw her out.
And by the way, you notice ezos means it's almost treating, objectifying her. Throw this out. And knock the door after her.
And she was wearing a beautiful colored garment, which kichen tilbashna benos hamelech habesulos meilim.
The unmarried girls would wear such garb.
Vayotze osa meshosa chutz vonala delas acharei, and she's thrown out and locked out. Vatikach tamar efer al rosha.
She takes ashes and places on her head. Ukasonas apasim ashela karan. She rips her coat.
Vatosim yodal rosha. She places her hand over her head. Vatelech aloach vezakon. She goes out. She wails. She cries.
So making a public display.
Vayomer Eliyahu Avshalom Achia, her blood brother Avshalom turns to her and says, Ha'imonon Achich Hayaimach. He asks her euphemistically, was your brother Amnon with you? V'ato achosi acharishi achichu. Keep quiet. He's your brother. Altoshisi es libech ladavor azeh. Don't pay attention to this. Vateisha Tamar v'shomema beis Avshalom achia. And she returns in a desolate state to her brother Avshalom's house. Now, it's not because Avshalom doesn't care about her. Oh boy, does he care about her. So that's going to be the next section. But he says this is not the right approach, what you're doing. She returns to his house, a house of refuge. And I guess this is the biggest tragedy, is the last two psukim, which is Melech David Shama es kol hadvarim udvarim o'eleh. Domelech gets extremely angered by what he hears, but there's no response. And Avshalom does not speak to his brother, his half-brother, Amnon. And he hates him for what he did to his sister. You notice, of course, that this section begins and ends with hate. Right? So it starts off with the hate from Amnon to Tamar, and it ends with the hate which is being reciprocated by from Avshalom, the defendant of Tamar, for his brother Amnon. So there's a lot boiling in this pot right now. So a number of things just to think about, and this is one of the biggest, the most troubling things about this whole parak is just the volatility of Amnon. Meaning to say, like, if you really, really, really wanted a relationship with her, then make a relationship with her. You know, get things right. He either hates her or he loves her. How can there be love and hate at the same time? And so the Mefarshim really struggle trying to work this out. There are a number of interesting suggestions that are made. We'll see very, very different. Some physical, psychological, emotional, divine. The very different ways of looking at this. So let's take a look at the first one. The Gemara itself addresses this. The Gemara says that a very unusual thing happens here, and that is the following. Take a look at, now we're in the source packets. This is the packet with the picture of the coat on it. This is on the top of the page, it's in source 13. The Gemara in Sanhedrin 21b says, Rashi quotes this, Vayisna'er Amon, sina gadola, he hated her, great hatred. My time, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, nimon nikshor lo va'asa, asoy karus shavcha. That means to say that he was physically harmed through his relationship with her, permanently. Which means to say that he now walked out of this in a way where he was impotent for the rest of his life. And so there was this tremendous hate that he experienced for her. Now, it's interesting that the later Mefarshim asks us, Rashi quotes this on Tanakh, some of the Mefarshim says, like, you know, that's not naturally possible. Like, the permutation that Gemara has suggested over here seems to be a little far-fetched. And so the Chida, in responding to this, says, that's precisely because it was far-fetched is exactly what happened. Is that mean to say that he was harmed in such a permanent way from his relationship with her? And what happens is that after that he realizes that because the likelihood of this happening was so low, that it must be because of her, meaning in her merit, that he was harmed. Therefore, how does he, in his will, call it, you know, what do people do when they're in pain? They blame, right? So he needs to find a way to blame. So he understands that it must be because of her that this has happened to him. So now that permanent damage which has been done to him, now he reflects onto her. So that means that the Gemara is giving us a subtext as to what happened over here, which could perhaps explain. Because you see, there seems to be something missing, right? Means that there seems to be, he's so lusting after this Tamar. Then suddenly there seems to be so much anger. What's missing? The Gemara says there's a missing piece over here, and that is what happened in between. That's what the Gemara does. But at this point in time, the subtext is completely invisible in the sense that we don't see it, we just see the reaction to it in the text. Some of the Mefarshim try to say, well, let's see if we can actually see in the text itself without having to insert another circumstance into this. That's the one option. Now, so the Mitzvot David says something very, very elegant and very simple. You don't have to have said anything else happened. It's very simple. What happened is that the Mitzvot David says in the next source in 15, he says, Dvayisna'er, Ulai gadaftoi bidvarim. What happened was, she cursed him. Meaning to say, he was raping her. She cursed him and shouted at him and screamed at him and called him terrible names. And he now sees what she really thinks of him. And now, so when he hears, you can't put that back in the bottle. So he understands now exactly what she thinks of him or what her assessment of him. Which, by the way, she said earlier. She said, if you do this, you're going to be the lowest of lowest. You're going to be an echad me'anavalim. You're going to be one of the disgraced individuals in Israel. She meant that. So now he knows what she thinks of her, of him. It still seems a little bit 100, 0 to 100, very fast. But nonetheless, this is what the Mitzvah says. And that's a very likely a very likely suggestion. To me, the most intriguing idea over here is the Malbim. I really, really think this is such a powerful, powerful idea in any aspects of our lives. Here's how he addresses it. He says, why is it from love to hate so fast? He says, Vayisnael, achar shehaya ta'avos ta'ava kelavis. Since his desire for her was, what's the word kelavit, what do you think? Like dogly, right? So I mean, he said, like it was so animalistic. Meaning, he said, when he looked at her as an object. He didn't look at her as a human being. He didn't look at her as a partner in life. He looked at her as an object. Because that was his way that he looked at her, miyad shenichbe reshef hatava, then when that, we'll call it animalistic desire, was satiated, cholfa ahava shelo hoisa ahava atzmit. It wasn't a love for her. It was desire for what she would give him. Therefore, then when that disappeared, va'az be'akira ta'ava nevala hazot. Now he realizes, he wakes up and he says, he's basically slept with his sister. Right? That's, now he's going to be the laughing stock of society. He's such a disgraced act. Shav lisno et hanose sha'al yodo nispav lo hazot. So what does he do? He looks at the vehicle through which he got here. Right? Which is her. V'zeshako. So now what that means to say, such a terrible and powerful thing that's happening to him over here is, you know, like it's lahavdil on a much, much smaller scale. You know, the person who decides they want to go on a diet and then they don't live up to their what they did. You know, as Jackie Mason used to say, I dieted for 14 days and all I lost was 2 weeks, right? Right. So a person he or she wants to diet and they break it out. So what happens is, what goes on in their mind afterwards? There's this guilt, right? And I shouldn't have, I really should. I knew I could have held out. It really looked good, but I could have just left the room. Like all the things that go through our heads, and the self-blame. What's happening here is that this is not about breaking a diet. This is disgusting. This is heinous. This is the lowest of the low. So imagine the degree of guilt and anger that he's feeling. But as opposed to turning it inwards, what does he do? He turns it outwards. It's such a deeply flawed human nature that we're watching over here, which just happens all the time. Nirao Sachs, or Jonathan Sachs, addressed the EU a number of years ago, and he was talking about the rise of anti-Semitism in Europe. It was such a very profound address. And he basically said that anti-Semitism is a sign of a sick society, of a society which is ailing. He says, because why? And by the way, that's why the highest anti-Semitism in Europe, the highest neo-Nazi ratio in Europe today is in Greece, because the economy is on the brink of collapse at any moment in time, right? More than any other country, because once you have an ailing country, then what happens is there's two questions a country can ask. Question number one is, how can we fix this? Question number two is, who did this to us? When you look for do this to us, you need an other who's closely enough related to you that you can say it's you, but not quite you. And who have the Jews been? They've always been the perennial minority in Europe. So therefore, when a country is sick, what do? They say, who did this to us? It's an alternative to be able to ask the first question, which is, how can we fix this? So his argument is when you see anti-Semitism, you need to start fixing your society because it's a sign that your society is about to fall apart. And he's absolutely correct. But it's not just correct about countries, it's correct about human beings. When you see people blaming and the anger rises and rises and rises, what's this a sign of? It's a sign that the ship's about to fall apart. Right, this anger that he's expressing is the fact that he's collapsing internally. He's realized the degree of the gravity of his crime, but he can't turn it inwards. It's too painful. So what does he do? He turns to the vehicle which got him there. But it's not her fault. He's blaming the victim. This is the classic case of blaming the victim in here, as the Malbim says. And you know, we learn in Tanakh. This happened, you know, well over 3,000 years ago, just under 3,000 years ago, and things haven't changed. Things haven't changed. Humans are still humans. We witness this in the paper all the time. Unfortunately, this attitude, this corruption, as the Malbim says. And the Radak adds one extra comment, and the Radak's comment isn't an explanation, but rather it's a, we'll call it a meta comment. And he just says a very simple thing, and that is that in source 17, very, very brief comment, he says, V'yasna'er amon zos hasina ha'esos siba me'es Hashem. This was, he should not have been feeling this degree of anger. It was because Hashem was allowing him to feel it. Hashem wanted to orchestrate a greater hate on behalf of Avshalom to Amnon. So what did he do? He allowed Amnon to become irrationally hateful of his half-brother. Now, that doesn't mean to say, just to appreciate this, that doesn't mean to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was, you know, sort of tuning the dials in the back of his head. What that means to say is that Hashem allowed these other three previous ideas, whether it be that he was harmed, or whether it be that she cursed him, or whether it be that he was blaming the victim, he allowed those to go in excess without the breaks. So in order, why? For there to be a bigger picture, which is happening here, which is the machinations of this, which is extremely sad, this whole thing. There's no saving grace in this, unfortunately.
It seems, though, that if it's the divine plan that it does include hurting Tamar.
Yeah, so again, this is a very good question. It's like, you know, like, so how could she suffer for a divine plan, right? So the Radak did not say that she had to go through this because of the divine plan. That was because of his disgusting act. At the same time, there is a divine plan which is unfolding. So let's dial it back for a second. So if he'd chosen not to do this, it wouldn't have happened, right? But he, based on his corrupt thinking patterns, and or his not thinking, his feeling patterns, did this terrible act. So it allowed for the divine plan to go. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you chose that, I'm just going to allow the door to carry on opening, so to speak. The way it's described in the Gemara is, "Baderech she'adam rotzei leilech, molichen osa," Hashem says, you want to go in this way? I won't put any obstacles there. So Amnon, you want to be a terrible person? I'm going to allow all that corruption to fall out right now to allow this plan to work out. If it hadn't worked this out this way, there would have been another way that Avshalom would have, there would have been a Ra'ah which would have arisen from David's bias to come back to him. But nonetheless, this is where it is. Terribly sad, but just you're right. Just to be clear, Hashem was not causing her to be raped, Chas v'Shalom. Amnon made his own calculations. Hashem allowed that to sort of just continue in this terrible way. Yeah.
Rabbi, I've always learned that if something bad happens to you, it's because Hashem wanted it to happen to you. Who does it and who the agent is, Hashem allows that person to do it, and that person will be punished for it. But the fact that you put in a situation is Hashem's will.
You're right. So there's a number. You see, the problem is like this: is a lot of there's a number of permutations of how it could work. So you're presenting one permutation. One permutation is that you're right. We need to, as we have done previously, is that we need to disassociate, let's say, the murder from the death, as an example, right? So the murderer is culpable for murder, but the death, perhaps, right? That's sort of the disassociation that Rav Sadia Gaon does, and that's a classic idea of, which is what you're mentioning. Which means to say that the person who goes through something, whether it be good or not good, has their own cheshbon, and the person doing it to them has their own cheshbon. That's the way we generally understand it. The problem is that it doesn't always work in every situation. So, example being, Rachman Litzon, but like, you know, when you hear stories about children, right? So children who suffer chas v'shalom, Hashem irachem. But you can't say in that case it was because their personal accounting was, you know, lacking. Because children don't have a cheshbon avonos in the same way that adults have. So
what we see as bad might be good.
Okay, so but then you're presenting another model. Okay, so what you're saying is, I'm just explaining, there's numerous models. One is that there might be a longer picture of what's going on here. Another option is that there's what's called Yisurin Shel Avah. There's other ideas which is we don't even know, the Eov situations. So there's a number of ways that could happen. It's very hard to be able to acknowledge which cylinder is moving in the system. So meaning to say over here, we don't know. We don't know anything about Tamar. We certainly can't blame her. We're not gonna go into that. But at this point in time, what we are focusing on is the perpetrator. And that's Amnon, and we do have the grounds to do that because he is accountable for his actions. We're given very little to know anything about him. But you're right. There's numerous different ways you could look at Tamar, and the Mefarshim don't focus on that so much. Karen.
Okay. First of all, I was a little confused when you started with my friends here explained to me that there's two Tamars.
Yes. So there's a number of Tamars. Yes.
To disappoint you. But I guess I just found it interesting that there's two Tamars who are both raped. It seems so unusual. I mean, yeah. There's so many people in the Bible, and you're having two of the same name and the same scenario. But as far as the hatred is concerned with Amnon, I'm actually not surprised that he felt hatred. To me, it makes perfect sense. It's easier. First of all, hate and love are so connected. There's such a fine line between the two, actually. And when you do
They're both extreme.
Well, yes, exactly. But I'm saying if you do something so terrible like this, it's easier to go to hate, to hatred, than to actually feel the other way. Because if you do, it's enough to destroy you. Hatred is easy. You blame the other person. Mm-hmm. So
You're right. When you're driving very fast, right enough, that seems to happen. You're right. So I will just make mention is that the whole other Tamar in early in Tanakh is connected to this. So we will come back to it in a tangential way, because it does seem there wasn't a situation of rape necessarily, but I do want to mention that there is the previous story in Tanakh that relates to this, does seem connected. And one word which should have jumped out at us in this whole story is that she's wearing a kasones pasin, that she's wearing a colored garment, which is the multicolored garment, was the garment that Yosef wore. And I just want to put that out there, and just as we're going through this, notice in your mind how many parallels there are between these two stories. I've noticed 11 parallels. So just as we go through, it'll be interesting to notice that. Michelle, yeah?
No, I just picked one. I'm sorry.
And that is?
I have the other 10.
Yeah.
Just like when Shimon and Levi destroyed
Shechem.
Yaakov didn't say anything.
Yes, good. So another example over here is the father who knows what's going on and keeps quiet. That's another example of a parallel. Yaakov sees there's animosity between children from different mothers, and he keeps quiet. David sees animosity between two brothers from different mothers, and he keeps quiet. So there seems to be a similar build-up over here. So you're right, there's many. No, they're it was by Yosef and the brothers originally. Meaning when he sees that Yosef and his brothers, there's angst between the two of them. Vaviv shomaris adavar, after hearing the dreams, he doesn't intercede. He doesn't say, Yosef, right? Now, so I'm not connecting to the Dina story. I'm not connecting to the Dina story. I'm connecting it to the Yosef and the brothers story, to which the Tamar story is connected, because Tamar is an epilogue of that, of the sale of Yosef. Okay, so Dina was raped. Tamar was not. It was all the other way around. Tamar seduced Yehuda because she needed. Okay, just to. Okay. We're all good. Yes. Yes, but Tamar ultimately was, it's almost the opposite, but it's Tamar is the epilogue, or the, could we almost say, the correction in Yehuda's life of the Mechiras Yosef. So I'm saying in the Mechiras Yosef episode, there seems to be a number of very fascinating parallels. Maybe we'll explore them a little more. But let's get a little more material before we get there, because there's a lot to think about. So here we go. It's interesting. Why is it that what this whole business about the Kasones Pasim is very fascinating, is the reason why it seems that Al-Sheikh points out that she seems to be taking it off here, she's ripping it, is because it's a sign of being unmarried, a virgin, she is essentially trying to show the public what the disgrace which happened. So she is really leveraging this, and she is trying to create blame, and rightfully so, on Amnon. So in fact, the Gemara says it was more than that. The Gemara says, if you take a look, let's see where this is. Here we are, at the very bottom of the third page in source 20. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Chof Aleph and Beis, tells us that she was trying to accomplish more than that by going, ripping her clothes and going into mourning. It says, Vatikach Tamar Efer al Rosho, she places ashes on her head, V'skusunis tapasim asher alea kara, Tana mishmeder Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, Geder gadol gadra Tamar ba'oysa sha'a. She made a great regulation in society then. Amru libnos melachim ke'kach, if this could happen to one of the most powerful ladies in the kingdom, she's the crown princess. If this could happen to me, hediotos al achas kama v'kama. What about women who don't have any representation? We're not talking about 2019, right? I mean, think about just in the last century, how shocking it's been. Look at the Me Too movement. Look how shocking this has been, right? Think back now, almost 3,000 years. Im latznuas kach leprutzos achas v'kama v'kama. And she says, and I was minding my own business. I wasn't doing anything. I wasn't even out there. So she says, what about the young ladies who are out there, who don't have accountability, who don't have kings as their fathers? So therefore, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Ba'oysa Sha'a, Gazru ala Yichud v'ala Panuya. At that moment in time, they instituted a new rule, and that rule is called Yichud. Yichud is a very simple rule, and that means to say, is that young men and young women, or not young men and young women, any men and any women that are not married to each other or related directly in family cannot be in the same, secluded in the same area. They can't be locked in the same house. They can't be in a secluded area by themselves. Halacha. This is independent of anything else. This is independent of physical relationship. This is independent of touch. This just means to say that a young man and a young woman an old man and an old woman, whoever, is not allowed to be together. That's called yichud. These are halachas which are very infrequently known. And it requires a lot of learning to appreciate this. Where did it start from? Tamar. What was she doing? Why was she making this so public? Because she was saying society needs to be fixed. Society needs to be fixed, and this should not ever happen to anybody else. Very powerful statement. It's interesting that when Avshalom confronts her, what does he say? Hacharishi, he says, keep quiet. So he feels that she needs to turn it down. Why should she turn it down? So there's really two directions you can think of. Why would he want to turn her to quiet it down? So the Malbim says two ideas, and they're both sad ideas. Right? Well, it could be for him. But he doesn't suggest that. It's a very interesting idea, Hedy. That's a very interesting idea. What was that? Right. So what the Malbim says is on the one hand, and this is the sadder part is he says, he's still your brother, meaning Anon's still your brother. That's a voice we sometimes hear in society today, is don't drag them through the mud. Do they really deserve to be dragged through the mud? Meaning, he's your brother. And her answer should be, yes. Right? But his other side should be that for you as well. Because what's going to happen is you embroil yourself in this, and it's going to always reflect badly on you. It's always, the dirt's going to come up in the media, in the front page, and the testimonials, and in the Senate, the whole thing. Everybody's going to be talking about you, right? So he says, this is not the way this is going to be. And this is, by the way, you hear the pain on both sides here, and you appreciate how difficult it is. There's no win situation for her. There's no way she can come out of this in a dignified manner, whether she gets justice or she gets indignity. It's going to be a terrible, terrible tragedy here. The question which just is so hard to understand, to unpack over here, is David's reaction. David was the one who, when requested to send Tamar to, he allowed it. How could David Melech not do anything? Speak to him, sit down with Amnon. Take away his privileges to the crown. Do something. He is the firstborn. This is a king elect. So the Malbim says a very interesting suggestion. Sorry, the Chomas Anach, this is the Chidah, says in source 22. Very interesting suggestions. He gives three suggestions as to what's going on over here, and this makes it even more tragic. Here's what he says: Vayichar lo lema'od. David HaMelech gets really angry in source 22. Evshalomar ki tevas loy daiko ki yikir. He means to say he got angry to himself. Why? Ki yikir shenim shach mimash amar nasan anavi vesakiv so yishalem arbatayim v'zeh piryoy. He realized that when he said to Nasan anavi with a story that there was a shepherd who was a rich shepherd, and he took the one lamb of the poor shepherd, and David HaMelech's initial reaction was he needs to pay back four times, so that means to say that he brought upon his family the possibility of four terrible circumstances, four lambs in his family who would suffer. Then he realizes that he's been reading the writing on the wall of his own writing. This was an incident waiting to happen. Did it have to happen this way? No. But the potential for it existed because he already dictated the potential could happen based on his own judgment. So David HaMelech was Vayichar Loi. He grew angry with himself because he had indicted himself. He had indicted his family with his own comment. That's what's happening here. Why didn't reach outwards? V'yesh mi shepiresh, says the Chidah one step further. Dachar Loi shu sholach l'tamar etzel Amnon. Even worse. He was the one who allowed Tamar to go visit Amnon in the first place. He should have seen through. Why is Amnon suddenly all of a sudden sick and wants to eat out of Tamar's hand? I mean, he realizes he facilitated this. He can never forgive himself for this. He realizes that he's to blame. So what's he going to do? He's going to go over to Amnon now. And Amnon says, but you allowed me to, Dad. Didn't you see? Couldn't you see how this lovesick I was? David HaMelech is the terrible, terrible situation. Finally, the last idea that the Chidah says, "V'gam charolami bale haloshen hora." He's worried about those tongue waggers in society. Why? She is karenu, she is karu inyan bas sheva. What's going to happen? David HaMelech is going to publicly speak to his son, and there's going to be a press conference in which he will now unknight him and take away his throne and send him to the doghouse for the next 5 years. But what's Gabriel going to say? David HaMelech, look who's speaking.
Mr. Pure, after all, right? You know, you want to talk about relationships, right? David Melech, you're the paragon of virtue. Says David Melech, I have no voice. The carpet's already taken from underneath me. So the tragedy is even worse. It's compounded. What is essentially, by the way, notice that the entire chida is based on one word, and that is loy. All of this was David Melech trapped, not from the outside, but from the inside, from himself. Either because he dictated the punishment, or because he facilitated this, or because of his previous life was now silenced by it to be able to say anything. Terrible. It could be, and that's part of it. That meaning, if you think about the number one and three are actually related psychologically and spiritually, right? That's he hears that echo in his mind the whole time. Shelley.
I don't think it's just the Lashon Hara thing. It's also, if he approaches Amnon and says, what did you do? I'm going to say, Dad, who are you to talk to?
100%. 100%. He's lost any credence. He's lost any credence where he can say anything. That's where he's stuck. Just to the magnitude, you know, when David HaMelech said to Hashem, Bochaneini no, test me. David had no idea. David had no idea what was about to happen. So let's go one step further now. So let's get into what now happens next. So Avshalom hates Amnon and he doesn't speak about it, and now he starts getting ready for this. In fact, I actually just one last mefarish over here in the Malbim says one very powerful word. Maybe we'll close the Ral Malbim after we do the Psukim. So let's return to the Psukim for just a moment. We're going to now look at the Psukim which are to be found from Psukim Yud Perek Yud Gimel Chaf Gimel to Pasuk Lamed, so from 23 to 30. Here we go. Vayhi Lishnosayim Yomim. It was a little bit later. Vayu Gozim La Avshalom VeBal Chatzar Asher Im Ephraim. They were shearing their sheep in Baal Chatzar. Vayikra Avshalom Lecho Bnei HaMelech, and he called all the sons of the king. David HaMelech had a number of children. Vayivu Avshalom El HaMelech, Vayomer Hinei No Gozim Avodecho, Yelech No HaMelech Vavodovim Avodecho. He says, let's go along and let's go and shear the sheep. Vayomer HaMelech Avshalom Arbeni Arno Nelech Kulon Velo Nichbad Olecho. He says, let's not all go, not the whole party. It's going to be too much for you. And he says, "Don't worry, David. You don't come. I'll take the brothers. You don't have to worry about being here." What about my favorite brother, Amnon? Shouldn't he come along with us? Why do you need him to come with you? And Avshalom says, "No, please, Dad. You know, I love Amnon so much." And all the children of the king go along with him. By the way, we now have another interesting episode where you have a father sending a son into the jaws of death from his other brothers unknowingly to that son. Sounds familiar, right? It's going further. Vayetzav Avshalom es na'arav lemor, ru'u na ketoiv leiv Amnon bayayin. Wait until they work hard in the day and they drink hard at night. So after he has had his wine at night, wait for him. Va'marti aleichem haku es Amnon v'amitem oisoi al tiro. Kill him. Don't worry. Haloi ki anochi tzivisi eschem chizku v'yulu v'nei chayel. Be men. Go kill him. I commanded you. Everything's fine. Va'yasu narei Avshalom l'Amnon kashir tzivo Avshalom v'yakumu ko b'nei ha-melech. Va'yirkavu ish al pidroi v'yakumu ko b'nei ha-melech. Va'yirkavu ish al pidroi v'yinusu. And all the sons of the king immediately get up and race away on their mules. And the news comes back to the king that all your children have been killed by Avshalom. Terrible. Nothing travels faster than bad news, as they say. Which is a footnote. There's a Douglas Adams book, for those of you on the more whimsical side, who says that he starts off one of his books by saying, nothing travels faster than the speed of light except for bad news. And they tried powering rockets with it, but nobody wanted those rockets wherever they arrived. So bad news travels fast. So here, there's a few things to think about in this. Why do you think, by the way, that the king's sons are running away? Why do they immediately dash? But they think, from their perspective, they see this as an action of? Treason, but what is behind Avshalom's? So they see this as a movement to the throne.
And if there's a movement to the throne, then they're also in the way. So they're in a way. But really, in truth, what is it? It's a revenge. Right? The revenge wasn't about them, because it's a revenge for his sister.
Yeah, but he didn't really revenge, because he didn't kill them. Like,
it's interesting. So why does he delegate it? Like, why does he delegate? You're right. It's a very good question.
Does anybody else know what happened other than Absalom? Because he found her crying. So
that's a good question. I would imagine
on
the bad news level of things, I'm sure that people were aware of it. You know, maybe Absalom caught her at early enough, but we don't know. This whole business about the news, is it true, is it not true, the news that came to David? Not true, it's just they aren't there. So the news comes back, all the king's sons are gone. Here is the thoughtful insight of the Malbim. Let's just take a quick look at this Malbim, which is so, so powerful. This really is the underlying message of this entire perek in source 24. Loi Diber, he says, Shiura Kosov. The message, the basic understanding of this pasuk is, Yan Shesona Avshalom es Amnon, because he hated him so much, he couldn't speak to him whether for good or for bad. For the pain it caused by the rape of his sister. Therefore, he couldn't even say to him. He couldn't express that pain. He couldn't express that anger to Amnon. If he had done that, it may not have been an easy conversation. It may have taken a few years. But there might have been the possibility of them seeing eye to eye again enough. From good to bad. From bad to good, because bad can sometimes lead to good. We're going to skip the parentheses to three lines. Aval, misinosoi lerotso klal ledaber mizeh. He was so hateful of him, he didn't want to even give expression to it, because talking about it already now deflates that anger and that hatred. Rak shomar misitma. So what did he do? He bottled it up. And he allowed it to fester, and he allowed himself to brood on it. And that's why Amnon went out to party with them. Because he had no reason to believe, because all this pent-up rage was there. And I think part of what the Malim is saying here is the tragedy of this perek is communication. Right? Meaning, if at the beginning Amnon had so loved Tamar as he said he did, then speak to Dad, speak to David and say, can we get married? If that was a possibility, based on those Mepharshim. Then after this whole business, then there is David. David doesn't say anything to Amnon. He doesn't assure Avshalom. Avshalom doesn't say anything to Amnon. Amnon doesn't confess or express his contrition to the public. It's all bottled up, and when things bottle up, they explode. And then we're watching an explosion of epic proportions, because it's not just people, it's family. The whole family is going to be shaken and irrevocably changed after this because of these actions. Again, here coming back to another parallel, which is fascinating, is now to what you're hinting to earlier, is Karen, in the rape of Dina. What happens over there is another episode which is also parallel, is Dina is raped by Shechem. And when in comes Hamor and Shechem, and they're explaining, you know, that he really loves this girl, and he really wants to marry her, and it says, what does it say? Yaakov kept quiet till his sons came back, and then the sons took action. That's when they said this whole business, you know, just a minor operation, and for all males in town, and we'll all be fine. We'll intermarry, and they do that, and then Shimon and Levi go and wipe out the entire city of Shechem. And the very last closing argument of that whole story was, Hachazona ya'ase es achosenu. Are you going to allow our sister to be treated like this? So it's again, brothers fighting on behalf of sisters. But it's even more than that. Because if you think about it, what are they really saying? There are four sets of children in Yaakov's family. Where did this daughter come from? She was a daughter of Leah. What's the accusation the brothers are saying? Our sister, meaning, if it had been from Rachel's side of the family, maybe. We know that you have a favorite relationship with her. Maybe if somebody else from that side of the family had been affected, maybe Yaakov, you wouldn't have been so quiet. Do you see what's happening over here? The same kind of, you see the language is happening over here? Here there's a vengeance which is growing through an Avshalom who feels that his side of the family has not been addressed by a parent figure who's being quiet. Same kind of thing seems to be happening over here. And this is the danger of this. Did Yaakov even keep quiet because of that? Absolutely not. But that was how it was interpreted by the children. That seems to be the same thing which has been interpreted here. So I think this is a good stopping point. Maybe let me see if we can finish one more paragraph.
Yeah.
Let's try to finish just one more paragraph. Just finish just the paragraph. That's all right. Okay, Cheryl, is that right? Thank you. Just because then it'll give us closure, and then we'll be able to be in a better point to continue. So one last little section, and this is the last point of the parak. This is Psukim Lamed Aleph to Lamed Gimel. Here we go. Actually, you know what? No, you know what? There's a whole bunch of more Psukim. So it's to Lamed Test. Rather than rushing, let's try to appreciate them. We'll start that next week. Yes.